Hello everyone, I'm Penny and I am an alcoholic. So normally I tell all my sponsees who have never spoke before, always know how you're going to start out. And I didn't do that tonight. So I wrote some things down and I don't want to be reading, so I really don't know how this is all going to come together. So we're just going to find out together, aren't we? So step one is we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives were unmanageable. So a little statement I wrote down was, step one was my introduction to living a surrendered life. Surrendering to self, surrendering to someone else's experienced guidance, and surrendering to a power greater than myself. The delusion that I was like other people had to be smashed. So, you know, the part of that I'm going to start out with is the fact that I was not in control of my drinking. My drinking was in control of me. And a little bit about my background, because coming to the point of realizing I was powerless over alcohol meant that I was drinking alcohol. And I started doing that when I was about 14 years of age. Now, I had some sips of alcohol prior to that. But the more I drank, the more I had this, what we call the phenomenon of craving. You know, the fact that this is a threefold disease. Today, and after I entered AA, I was able to see that clearly. You know, that alcohol awakened to me the allergy of body and the obsession of the mind that Dr. Silkworth's, you know, chapter in the Big Book so, I think, beautifully explains. And you know, when I was drinking at the age of 14 and 15, I didn't drink every day. I mean, I grew up in the county, and I was the oldest of three children, and my dad wasn't around that much. He was always working. He worked second shift, so my mother was the disciplinary. And, you know, my drinking caused a lot of problems in our family because I was the oldest, and I was paving the way for my younger brother, you know. And you know, back then, yeah, I can say that I was having a lot of great times. I was raised in a Protestant church, and, you know, I pretty much just put God on the shelf. I knew that what I was doing was not the way that my higher power wanted me to conduct myself. But I conveniently just shut God out of my life and went on my way. I had met my husband when I was 15, and our entire relationship was one in which it was drinking. I didn't have any desires for anything but drinking. I tried to be a decent student. I always struggled with education. I'm not the sharpest tool in the box, as they say. I always had to work hard for my B's and C's, and you know, alcohol didn't help that at all. And so I grew up with a lot of insecurities, a lot of self-doubt, and alcohol kind of just washed that away. I, you know, when I wanted to fit in with my classmates, you know, I didn't have to go out and try to be athletic or be talented or play a musical instrument or be good. No, I just had to drink, and those friends found me, and I found them, and it really was a fertile ground for me to continue on that path. And that's all I knew. I look back today and I think how much was taken from me because of drinking. And the fun times were there, but they were empty fun times. They were just getting drunk, escaping, you know, wanting not to be who I was, and alcohol afforded me that. I can't say I hear a lot of people speak about that they felt smarter and prettier and stronger, and I never felt any of that when I drank. I just was there. I was not a very sophisticated drunk. You know, I would drink and fall down and slur my words and throw up a lot, and so I was not very classy when I drank. I tried to be rough. I used a lot of foul language. I was tough, you know. I was a bar drinker. And so as the consequences built up over time, from the age of 14, and I got sober when I was 24, that decade I quickly declined. And the unmanageability and the powerlessness, you know, I was trying to control that drinking in some respects by engaging in all kinds of craziness. Not so much the controlled drinking. I did control drinking the week before I got sober, because I thought, you know, this is my last chance to prove to myself that I can do this, and I proved that I could not. I mean, when I drank, I drank. I was all in. Just to kind of keep it brief, I don't want to go on and give a drunkalogue. The other thing that was very apparent to me was that I was unable to hear truth because of my character defects, and those really mounted when I was drinking. I was full of self-centeredness. There was an underlying anger, if you will. Mostly self-will run riot. There was no speaking truth into me. There was nobody that was going to convince me. I think about how blatantly I lied, especially to my parents, because I was under their authority, supposedly then. I mean, I really thought I knew everything. And, of course, that's natural as a teenager and as a young adult, until you get some of life's hard knocks. But when I added alcohol, oh my goodness, you know, I was just very willful. And, I found a quote by Benjamin Franklin, and he says, "He who knows nothing is nearer to truth than he whose mind is filled with falsehoods and errors." And that, to me, was my untreated spiritual disease. I was full of selfishness and self-centeredness. I was self-will run riot, as our big book says. And there was no breaking that hard crust, you know, until I came to AA. And you know, I'll be getting into that a little bit more about what I call the disease of ignorance. You know, I was ignorant about what was going on in my life as far as alcohol was concerned. And the powerlessness, I think about how many times how many times do we swear off, right? I'm never going to drink again, you know, praying over the porcelain goddess, you know, and meaning it, you know. And that's what I love about Bill's story, is that he meant all those times that he said he was going to drink, and the story of the jaywalker, and how mystified we are, like, how can we do this in our family? Like, they are just as mystified as we are, because we're ignorant about what's really going on and how this disease or this situation. I know sometimes I get a little torn about the disease concept. I'm more of a person that probably believes more of the spiritual disease, but I do believe that I'm wired differently, that when I ingest alcohol, something clicks for me and I can't get enough, and I will drink until the bitter end if I don't stop that. I believed in God, but was unwilling to be under his direction. And again, I kind of shared, you know, I was kind of tied into my church early on. But I was so unwilling to go, let go of my character defects. And, you know, all of that coupled together towards the end, by the young age of 24, I had had enough. There were times when I'd be driving home again at 2 a.m. and, you know, I'd be checking out the telephone poles thinking, you know, yeah, I could run my car into this telephone pole. And then the other thought was, well, what if it doesn't do it completely? Then what do I have? And not that I was suicidal, but I wanted to escape from this malady of this repeated craziness. Like, I just couldn't figure out how, you know, on a Thursday night, all day long at work, I'm telling myself, you're not going to that bar, you're not going. And, you know, all afternoon I'm playing that, and I get out of work at 5, and it's 5:20, and I'm sitting on the bar stool. I mean, it's like, what's happening here, you know? And I remember those television shows that would come on, you know, the news at 6 o'clock, and then there was MASH, and then there was something else, and then there was Blackout, you know, and then it's 2 o'clock in the morning, you know. And, you know, I suffered horrific hangovers. I didn't drink well, and I think probably just because I drank so much, I was always sick. Didn't matter if I had a six pack or if I, you know, drank a half a bottle of booze, I always got very, very sick. And so that, after a while, it made me soul sick. It affected me physically and mentally. And obviously the unmanageability got to the point where I became a raging lunatic. You know, my husband and I, we had serious problems in our relationship. And, you know, involved, you know, physical fighting, infidelity, just complete. We lived like two roommates more than we lived like a husband and wife. And my employer was saying things to me such as, you know, we're not, you know, you, back in the old days, you could get your pay a day early. Like, the checks were cut early in the week, and I would try to get my check on a Thursday, and guess what happened on Friday? I didn't show up. And so I had various people speak to me, you know, kind of like an HR type environment, but it wasn't HR back in those days. And, you know, how defiant I was, and, you know, trying to figure out what is going on. How can I manage this so that people are not upset with me? Because, you know, I had always been a person that was, I call it the tug of war. I so wanted to please God and please others, to a point, obviously. And that really caused a lot of stirring up of ill feelings within me. Because, you know, I did try to get good grades. I did try to be a good daughter. I did try to be a good wife. And when I was sober for those few days, I kind of lived up to that. But as soon as I started drinking, it all went out the window. And then I would feel the guilt and the shame and the remorse and all of those things that Bill so beautifully, you know, describes in his story. So that powerlessness, it just got to the point where I couldn't control my self-destructive behaviors. There's another book that I read often, and this might sound really gross, but this is what it was like towards the end. And the verse goes, like a dog that returns to his vomit is a fool who repeats his folly. And that's Proverbs 26:11. And it's like, yeah, as sick as I was, that's the only solution I knew, was to keep going back to the alcohol. Over, it was killing me, it was poison, it was destroying everything in my life. And at that point in my life, I could not see any way around that. The alcohol had to be my solution. And, you know, there comes a point where, for me, it was pure exhaustion. I got to the point that I was finally beaten into a state of submission. And I look at that as God's grace coming into my life, that my eyes were opened. And the way my eyes were opened was a Wednesday morning. And I got a phone call at work, and it was Eric. And Eric is one of us. And he'll tell you he's more of one of us, in that he's got 2 weeks of sobriety on me, so I always nicely remind him that it's quality, not quantity. So I'm at work, and it was a typical Wednesday night or Tuesday night at our house that we had a friend over, and we're playing quarter bounce with a case of beer, because you got to try to stretch that beer out, right? And he didn't go to work that morning, and I didn't know. I was living out in the county, and I was driving to work. That's 25 miles to get to Erie to go to my job, and so I get this phone call, and he's asking me about my insurance information. And it's like, well, why do you need my insurance? It's our insurance, but hear me, it was my insurance. And he says, I'm in a rehab. And it's like, we had never discussed his drinking. It was my drinking we were always discussing, because I had a tendency to go to work on a Friday, and then I'd arrive home Sunday night, and that was when he didn't have a car. We had one car, so I kind of left him stranded out in the country, and I'd be gone. I don't even know where I was at, you know. Sometimes I was honest. Where were you? I don't know. And so because of my drinking patterns, I wasn't able to, you know, I was the brunt of the discussion, you know. And so when he told me that he was going into rehab, that's when my mind started going. And I even said to him, well, I thought I was the alcoholic, you know. And so he went into rehab, and of course the counselors there, you know, highly suggested that I should also consider doing the same thing. Now, this is the 80s, and everybody goes to rehab in the 80s. It was kind of like the thing to do. So that was the beginning of my controlled drinking for that week or two when he was in rehab. It was like, I can do this. This is way too drastic, you know. So I'd gone out to a bar and had, for the first time ever, a couple drinks, and I went home, patted myself on the back, and the second night I went out, did the same thing, and then the third night I went out and did all the complete stupid things I had always done. And that night, I was beaten into a place of submission, but in a really graceful way. I told everybody at that bar that I was getting sober. And that was October 9th in 1985. That was really my last drink. And it's like, I don't know where that came from, but I came to the point where I'd had enough, and I had my ears open, my eyes opened, my heart was open. Something spiritual was going on there. I didn't know that's what it was, that I was willing to try something different finally, you know. I knew the alcohol was not going to work for me. So coming into AA, you know, we talk a lot about this being a threefold issue, you know. So AA educated me, and it taught me that my disease of ignorance, and it taught me a lot about what the heck had been going on that previous decade. You know, it's alcoholism is a threefold disease of mind, body, and spirit. And again, I love the way that the doctor's opinion and Bill's story, you know, they talk about being restless, irritable, and discontent. You know, that definitely describes where I was at for a lot of years. And those are key words for me today in recovery. I have to be very mindful of the fact that when those start surfacing in me, it's time to take a check, you know, time to put into action the 12 steps. So one thing I never really thought about until I was, you know, preparing for this was that my mind is physical too. I guess I kind of like disconnected my mind from my body. I don't know why I would have done that, but then I thought, oh my gosh, all that alcohol I was putting into, you know, we talk about the allergy of the body. My mind is part of my body. It's a physical thing. And it just really made sense to me that that's why that phenomenon of craving would kick in, and how impact, you know, how hungover I was and cloudy and just so sick, you know, not just in my stomach and every pore in my body, but my head too. So the other thing is my spirit, you know, mind, body, and spirit, because of my physical addiction, my emotions, my character, and soul were not in harmony with my body. I talk a lot about the soul, and sometimes you use words, I don't know about you guys, but I do, and it's like, I wonder what that really means. So I thought I would look up the soul. Soul sickness is what I would call it. And I thought, oh my gosh, that is so descriptive of where I was at. So soul sickness is a demoralization, is characterized by feelings of hopelessness and helplessness and a perceived sense of incompetence. This condition typically involves vague, unexplained physical symptoms. And you know, I'm thinking, all those years I was just kind of drifting through life, drinking, and like, what is wrong with me? You know, I could not, I mean, I guess a part of me kind of knew that alcohol was a problem, but I was focused on this, the outcome of over drinking, right? The booze bruises, right, on the car, the missed work, the angry people, the lost money, the physical sickness. You know, all of those things is what I was focusing on. But after a while, it just, you know, the hopelessness and helplessness, like, I can't possibly stop drinking. This is what's making me deal with life. And so I think soul sickness is a very descriptive word for me to understand that I was just really sick. I was in need of AA in such a desperate way. So the other part of step one is the unmanageability, and I also discovered that my life was unmanageable upon arriving to AA. I kind of thought I had it all together, right? Because I had a home, I had a husband, I had a job, I had a car, I had, right? So my bottom was more of an emotional, physical, spiritual bottom, not from what people would see on the outside. And so I had jotted down, with every form of self-deception and experimentation, I tried to prove to myself I was an exception to the rule, therefore non-alcoholic. You know, and I think I got that right out of the big book. You know, that's what I was trying to do, was deceive myself and fool others that in all of my attempts to not be an alcoholic, whether it would be drinking with certain people. And, you know, there was a time that I was seeking counseling because, you know, I was trying all kinds of things because what was wrong with me? And I remember telling the counselor how Eric and I had such terrible times together. When we drank, we fought, right? Mary Ida wanted me to share a story. So here's a story of unmanageability. So Eric and I were both bar drinkers, and I think we're in a bar in Edinburgh, and we got in a fight in the parking lot because that's where all the good fights are at, right? So I think he was going to like start like hitting me around, and I'm sure I was slapping him, pushing him around a bit, and so I got scared, and I remember running into the bar. It was closing time, and the owners, you know, kicked us out. And it was just complete chaos, right? And then this guy came out of the bar, and he starts trying to hit on me. Because he sees that we're fighting, and I'm thinking that he's thinking that, you know, maybe he could, you know, connect with me that night. And I got so angry at him. And I called him on it, and I, you know, what are you, a vulture? That's just a snippet of one night of the insanity, but that's the way I was conducting myself. So I was telling my counselor about this, and she said, well, maybe you shouldn't drink with him. I thought, that's a great idea, you know? So towards the end, fewer times we drank together, because every time we drank together, it was not a good combination, every time. You know, exercise, I remember some of you probably remember Jane Fonda and all the aerobics and the attire. And I remember, it was a small town. I would dress up in my workout clothes, you know, the stock. What were those things called that came up to you? Leggings. Yeah, and your leg. Yeah, you guys know what I'm talking about. So I get all dolled up and go do aerobics, and then I go to the bar looking like that. I wouldn't even change. Oh my gosh, so exercise didn't work, and seeing the therapist didn't work, and controlled drinking didn't work. You know, none of those things were working. And that's what I learned in AA. That's how I got educated, that I was just trying to put a Band-Aid on a much bigger problem. And, you know, I think about all the times I thought I was wise in my own eyes. There is no change possible for me when I continue to think that a life run on self-will produces a life of self-control. And that's what I was trying to do. I was trying to get everything in order so that everything seemed like it was okay. And, you know, I really became aware of those tendencies after I came into AA and after I got sober for a long period of time, that these other things kind of took over my life. Even today, you know, my need to make everything perfect so that you think that I've got it all together. And I don't even think I do it to the level that you think I got it all together. It's that I think I have it all together. If I can manage all of these things, then I'm good. I'm okay. I don't need any further help or instruction or input from anybody. And so those are the things I kind of battle with as far as step one work today. I mean, the alcohol is one thing that you can, you know, stop drinking in your absence. The allergy of the body doesn't kick up because I'm not putting alcohol in my system. But boy, I can transfer to whatever, right? I can find some other thing to backfill my spiritual illness. So, how am I doing?
Well, you're doing okay. We have questions.
Oh, good. So this is it. This is working out really well. So, today the unmanageability can present itself in the form of holding a grudge, contempt prior to investigation, or just plain straight up unwillingness. So, that is all I have. Good. Oh, yeah, look at me. Yay.
Yeah, stay there.
Oh, okay.
You're going to answer the question.
All right, I'm ready.
Anybody have any questions?
Hi, I'm Pat. I wondered where you found that definition for soul sickness. I like that. Where did you find that out?
Webster's Dictionary.
That's simple enough.
Yeah, because that's the word, that's just the term that I'd always kind of attributed to myself, and I thought it should figure out what I was saying. Yeah?
Sounds good.
Penny, you mentioned that Eric surprised you by going into rehab, and then you did controlled drinking for a couple weeks. What prompted you to realize that maybe that you needed to take some steps? And did you go to rehab? Because I don't know. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe you could talk a little bit
about your
awakening.
Yeah. This might sound weird, but as dysfunctional as my relationship with Eric was, there was a sense that if he got sober, he would need to be in a dry place. And that was not our home. And so if I was going to continue to drink, it was kind of a paradox. We really despised each other on a lot of levels. We really disrespected each other, I guess is a better way. And I had this innate sense that if I left that relationship, that I was going to die. Why? Because I felt, this might be weird, that somehow being committed in a sick relationship was some sort of normalcy. I had a home. I had a job, I had, you know, when we weren't drinking, we were getting along okay. And if I left that, I knew what kind of drinker I was, so it was fear. It was fear like, oh my gosh, how can I continue on? I didn't know what step to take next, and that's why when I lead, I share that my higher power definitely knew what he was doing, and that Eric got sober first, because I had no way of negotiating in my head how I was going to come home and say, honey, guess what? I decided to go into a rehab to get sober.
This is the hard one right here.
Okay.
It'll get you.
I can't believe we have 40 people that are all shy. Anyway, thank you very much for doing this. It's very enlightening. Mm-hmm. You got sober really young.
Mm-hmm.
And have you sponsored anybody that was younger than you that
mm-hmm.
got sober?
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of looked at you like, yeah, well, you're, you know, of course you're an old person and you had to get sober. I'm much better off than you.
Mm-hmm.
How do you introduce them to the first step?
Mm-hmm.
We admitted we.
Yeah, I use all those AA sayings, you know, the ones we hate so much, like first things first. And so one of mine is the analogy of recovery being like an elevator, right? You're on the elevator, you can get off at the third floor, the second, or you can get out off on the base in the basement. And you know, I also share what my experience was when I first got sober. We were an anomaly, Eric and I. For one, we were married and we were getting sober together. And two, we were young. And the older members, because a lot of times the old timers were older, it was kind of a newer thing to see people getting sober at our age back in the 80s. And yeah, there was a group of us that were similar age. I'm just so grateful that they took us under their wing and put up with our shenanigans, because we were something else. We were loud and vulgar and combative, and you know, we were a rowdy bunch. And the so when I'm working with a new person, I remember what it was like, how kind people were to us and how open, and how there was a seat available. They passed on the message. And it's hard. It's hard when you think you're missing all that fun. And I probably the biggest thing I say is that you don't know what fun is. I didn't know what fun was. The only thing I knew was drinking. I thought that was fun. So given this program enough time, you know, work through your steps. What did we say? You know, try us for 90 days. I'm not a big fan of the 90 days thing. But, you know, I say try to get through the steps. And then if you don't like it, we will refund your misery. You know, it's all there for you if you want it back. But give it a chance. Oh my, you got a lot of, oh, you, I thought it was going to...
The meeting ends at, don't do that to her, she'll run away. Excuse me. So when you're working with a new person, okay, and they come to you and they say, would you sponsor me, and do you have any requirements for that person beforehand?
Well, for one thing, not too often am I asked by somebody to sponsor. I usually ask them if they need a sponsor. That has been something that's been kind of a revelation. Our book doesn't talk anywhere in it about you as a new member asking somebody to sponsor you. You know, it's our responsibility as members of Alcoholics Anonymous to work the 12 step, which means I'm going to ask you if you need a sponsor, if I have the time to do that. What was the second part? About how... What's that? You were asking...
Right. So, in other words, if somebody asks you to sponsor them...
And the requirements. The requirements, yeah. I love the fact that we're all the same age and we can just fill in the...
Yeah, I know.
So requirements, I guess it's by person, in that sometimes I'll tell somebody to call me every day for a few weeks, and then I gauge from our interactions where they're at. You know, it's that consistency, it's that willingness. The first thing I always do is I have them start reading the Big Book. And if it's 3 months later and they've not been able to get through the first 164 pages, there's probably an unwillingness and a readiness to move forward. Because if they're not willing to work the steps with me, then pretty much it's over. Because that's what I'm all about as far as, going to meetings and socializing, the fellowship, that's all great, very supportive stuff. But I'm a big person about, this is our solution. Yeah. I think she wants you to talk on the mic so it gets
on.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Right.
Hi, I'm Mary Beth. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mary Beth.
So, Penny, you talked about having a higher power even when you were drinking. So, can you talk about your higher power?
Well, I was going to save that for all the other nights. But, pretty much because I was focusing on step one, there was just a lot of guilt. I just couldn't face it. I couldn't face that I was not living a life that my higher power wanted me to be living. I knew the right way to live. I just didn't know how. And so AA was a wonderful introduction. When I heard that it was a spiritual program, I was so pumped. I mean, it was in rehab. I mean, I had a spiritual experience in rehab that I knew. I finally figured out how to get to God, because every time I went to church while I was drinking, I'd just sit there and cry. I was so overwhelmed with all of those negative feelings that it was just easier for me to shut the door on it. It was easier to, like, shutting the door on my family, just ignoring anything that I couldn't deal with by drinking. So that's how I treated my relationship with my higher power, was I'd shut the door on it when I was getting, while I was drinking.
Hi, Penny. Bruce, Hi. Alcoholic.
Hi, Bruce.
Thanks for coming and sharing your step one with us. And listening to that, I drank like at 14 until I was 55. So the question that's coming in my head is, were you a binge drinker or were you a daily drinker? Did you take it to work and were you drinking all the time for that tenure?
I was not a daily drinker. I was a weekend warrior, and then my weekends would start on Thursday, and then my weekends would sometimes start on a Wednesday. I called it the Sunday night horror show. Sunday nights, the realization that the weekend was over. And I'm going to date myself, but, watching WQLN, I think there was a show called Nature or something on Sunday nights, and just the whole weight of the week of drinking would, be there. I definitely binge drinked whenever we had a few days off. I knew that I could not... I didn't drink at lunch. I didn't do any of that because I knew I never wanted one drink. So if I started, I was going to complete. And if I couldn't complete it, I wasn't going to start. Yeah.
Thank you.
Good job.
Thank you.
Good job. All right.